Hello and welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney and I watched this after getting home from work on Friday because I'm an adult with a job watching Disney Channel movies.
I'm Matthew Gatos. I watched this movie late last night with a glass of sherry and
Ooh. Yeah.
My name is Bunny Ness, and I watched this about 20 minutes ago when I woke up on Saturday morning like it was a Saturday morning cartoon.
Ooh. And I'm Sari Riley, and I watched it while soaking my feet in an Epsom salt bath because I'm an old person with sore feet.
This week, we are discussing You Lucky Dog, the 1998 Disney Channel original movie. And to start us off, Matt is going to tell us all about this cast and where they are now.
Which is going to be a little sad.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so many people in this cast are dead, guys.
Oh.
Not dwell too much on that. First, we've got Mr. Kirk Cameron playing the lead role of Jack. And I'll go ahead and lump her in here while we're talking about him. Chelsea Noble plays Allison, the attorney, lawyer, whatever, in this film. Those two, in real life, are a married couple.
And oh!
Have been married since they were, like, 21. And the only things I think I saw that she acts in to this day are the same things that he pretty much acts in, which are the Left Behind movies the Saving Christmas from the atheist movies that he makes. Yeah, the only thing the two of them still act in are the same projects.
I like the idea of them sitting on a couch and him getting a contract or something and be like, honey, you want to act in this one too?
Well, I guess.
It also seems like maybe he is involved in producing a lot of his projects too.
I think he is.
Like, because it's his whole jam now is being like hardcore Christian whatever, like making Christian media.
Yeah, and I think he is the producer on most of those things.
Interesting. Okay, that makes more sense.
You all made noises of like surprise when you were like they were married, but I knew this. One, because they starred in Growing Pains together and they've been married since very young. She was his love interest in that show, and it was one that I watched. And also because growing up Christian, you really didn't escape Kirk Cameron as like Kirk.
He won't
the
let
one
you.
Christian celebrity, yeah. But we have Kirk. Great, thank you. It's everything I ever wanted. But yeah, their jam nowadays seems to be just like this Christian media that they do together. So
yeah, it's really interesting, and like it always like creeps up on me, and I could kind of forget about Kirk Cameron for a while, and then I see a trailer for Saving Christmas and I'm like, oh right.
That guy.
That's what he's doing.
Yeah, I also watched Growing Pains, but it is now at a point where as soon as I saw his face in this movie, like that is the mental association that I have. It's like Left Behind and all of that. I didn't, which it's also that I didn't actually watch, but like I'm aware of it.
Yeah, it's a little, the Kirk Cameron-ness is tainted a little bit for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Also just because, not just because of the movies he makes, but also, you know, public statements he says.
Yes. The words that come out of his human mouth.
Yeah. So moving on to some of the supporting cast here, we've got the trio of Mr. Windsor's relatives, who are his two nephews and his niece. His one niece is played by Christine Healy, and she does just everything that's ever been on TV, pretty much. She has been on one episode of, so nothing, she's never had like a starring role, it seems. She's not in movies, just one episode of TV all the time. Kind of similar with John Delancey, who plays Lyle Windsor, one of the other nephews. Again, TV actor, ton of things. You've probably seen him in something because he's been in everything, including The West Wing, which is where I recognized him from. And then the third, let's say stupider, nephew is played by Taylor Negron, who is, in my memory, he is from Angels in the Outfield. And he, unfortunately, beginning this sad train, he died in 2015. And yeah, let's just continue down this sad train. I'm sorry. This is not my fault.
Yeah, Matt. Why did you do this?
I'm sorry, I did not save these people's lives. But yeah, continuing that, we had Mr. Windsor, who is barely in this movie, but is played by Hansford Rowe. He starred in Dante's Peak as well as like an episode of Modern Family and stuff. But he died in 2017. Moving on, we have James Avery, who plays Calvin Bridges, Mr. Windsor's driver in this movie. He's obviously most recognizable as Uncle Phil from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and he died in 2013.
Sarah, did you recognize him as Uncle Phil?
I recognize none of these people.
Okay.
Oh, really? Not even like Kirk Cameron?
No. I live under... There's like a YouTube series called Under a Rock with Tig Notaro, and I'm not like quite that under a rock, but very much so.
I mean, Uncle Phil is like a very recognizable human.
Yeah.
If for no other reason than like memes, like the internet, I feel like.
Yeah, no. But not even the internet has given me this knowledge.
Well, you might be slightly more familiar with the voice of the next person, Christine Cavanaugh, and this plays Bernice / the receptionist in Kirk Cameron's character's office at the beginning of the movie. She was the voice of Chucky Finster on Rugrats, Oblina on All Real Monsters, and she was the original voice of Dexter on Dexter's Laboratory.
That's cool.
I love her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I will end that by saying, unfortunately, she also died in 2014.
Oh. Damn it, Matt.
I didn't. We can end this on an upbeat note. Lucky the dog is played by Bogus, and he's living on a beautiful farm upstate.
Oh, yay.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I... for sure thought the dog was going to be the one of the actors who was dead. Because
I mean...
Sorry.
Yeah.
The beautiful farm upstate is like...
Sorry, I'm a child.
Yes, the dog lives on a beautiful farm upstate.
This 35-year-old dog.
You have to keep that in, but I'm very embarrassed.
This is the oldest dog in the world, Bogus, the dog who played Lucky the dog in You Lucky Dog.
I didn't do the math in my head, so I was just like ready.
She just wanted to believe that he was living on this farm, okay?
Yeah.
That's fair.
Along with my childhood goldfish, you know.
That goldfish that's just running free on that farm.
Yeah, frolicking.
Mari, why don't you tell us what this movie was?
We start the movie, and through an opening montage of articles and pictures, we establish that Kirk Cameron is a dog psychic. He can read his dog's mind. In the movie's present day, we see that Kirk has set up shop as a dog therapist, except it's mostly a scam because as Kirk got older, he lost this ability to hear dogs. But I think that maybe like the unsaid thing in the movie is that he was once able to hear like his childhood dog's mind, and then the dog probably died. And I don't know if I'm being morbid or if that's like the sense that we all got, that because it wasn't like really established that he could hear all dogs' minds, just that one dog. And they never told us like what happened to that dog. It was just like, and then I grew up and I couldn't do this anymore.
I got the sense that it was all dogs. I honestly didn't give it that much thought.
I think it was a little unclear. Like, I think early on, it does seem like he was talking to all dogs when he was 14. But then in the court case near the end, which we'll get to, he seems to proclaim something along the lines of he could talk to his childhood dog. And then now this is the first dog since then that he could talk to. So it is also a little confusing even within the proper context.
Because even in all of like the articles in the montage or whatever, it was just him and the same dog. It was like him and his dog.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
All right. Well, sorry. I think his childhood dog died, and that's why he lost his ability.
Went to a farm upstate.
Yeah.
Sorry. I didn't want to confuse anyone else. Okay. He went to a farm upstate.
Yeah. His powers aren't powerful enough. They can't reach the farm. It's too far upstate.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's too far. Okay. Great. Any depressing. One day, a rich man named Mr. Windsor brings his dog Lucky in, and Kirk is surprised to find that he can hear Lucky. So he's freaked out and sends them away, but not before divulging that Lucky is upset by the three awful people that Mr. Windsor lives with. 2 weeks later, Mr. Windsor's driver, Uncle Phil, comes back with the news that Mr. Windsor died. He brings Kirk back to the Windsor estate for the will reading, and basically Mr. Windsor gets some sick burns in his will and leaves nothing to his niece and two nephews, and puts everything in a trust for his dog Lucky, with Kirk acting as the trustee. Kirk moves into the mansion and becomes Lucky's new owner. The niece and nephews, Margaret, Lyle, and Reuben, meet with a lawyer to see how they can get the house and the money back. The lawyer says they'd have to prove Kirk mentally incompetent, and he'll charge a 30% fee, but they're unhappy with that, so they decide to take matters into their own hands. Meanwhile, we learn that the psychic connection thing goes into a full-blown, like, channeling of the dog. So Kirk ends up, like, scaring off the housemaids when he starts digging in the yard for bones. He takes Lucky on, like, a blank check type shopping spree, but then ends up like barking around the mall and the food court, so things get a little wild. The niece and nephews fail to get the evidence of Jack channeling the dog, and they fail to kidnap the dog, so they head back to the skeezy lawyer, who agrees to represent them in court for a 50% fee. At court, despite the testimony of everyone who has seen Kirk acting like a dog, he's able to prove his ability to channel Lucky, and while he's doing this, he sees one of Lucky's memories of when Mr. Windsor died, aka was poisoned by his one nephew. Kirk snaps out of it and tells everyone that Mr. Windsor was poisoned. The idiot nephew pulls out a gun in court. I don't know what his plan was. He just pulls out a gun. But Lucky saves the day when he tackles the nephew. And at the very end, we see that Lucky has bought all the dogs in the dog store. The end.
Okay, nostalgia check. Have you seen this movie before, Matt?
No, it does not feel familiar at all.
I have not watched it. Also does not feel familiar, and not in the same way that like last week Under Wraps, I was like, I've seen at least like commercials or posters of this. Nothing. No recollection at all.
Yeah, same. Like absolutely no recollection whatsoever. Sari.
Nope. Like, as you can tell from my lack of recognition of any actor in it, went in blind.
Okay, so did you like this movie?
I mean, no, I did not. Like, the movie that Mari just described sounds better than what we watched, because most of what you just described takes place in like the last 20 minutes of this movie. Meanwhile, most of the movie is just Kirk Cameron doing dog stuff over and over.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, that's not untrue. And yet, I didn't hate this one. It was fun. I mean, it felt short, which is probably why I didn't mind that it was just Kirk Cameron doing a pretty decent job acting like a dog. He had the mannerisms pretty down. But yeah, sure. It was like it was a romp of a movie. And if my nieces wanted to watch this, like, I'd watch it with them. If they wanted to rewatch it, maybe I wouldn't hate my life. It was fine.
I didn't like it as much as Under Wraps. I think because I have no experience with these, I'm going to like rank them relative to the one that I saw last week, because that seems to make the most sense in my brain. So it wasn't as good as that. I really liked the dog actor. He was so good. I haven't watched that many movies with dogs in them, but it was like he did head nods and stuff like that. I don't know. I had a very dumb dog maybe growing up. She's great. I love her very much. But there's no way she could do a fraction of what Lucky did in this movie. So it was fun, mostly for the dog.
I also had fun. I think I had more fun with this than I did with Under Wraps, though maybe this is, you know, because I've learned from Sari last time how best to take in the movies. So I didn't take notes while I was watching it, which I did last time. I learned that that was bad. So I had more fun watching this one than I did watching that one. I was a little stressed out, though, because plots where someone is telling the truth and no one believes them stresses me out. Like, this is like the subject of many of my nightmares. So it stresses me out so much to watch that happening. But other than being incredibly stressed out for Kirk Cameron, who was telling the truth about being able to read a dog's mind and not being believed by any of the otherwise rational people around him, I enjoyed this movie.
I'll also add that I was was like secondhand embarrassed for him all the time. Like yes. every time he was like, oh no. And like crumbling into the dog position, I was like, oh no.
Oh my God.
And to Matt's point, yeah, that was a large chunk of this movie where I was like suffering for him as he was digging through trash cans and dirt with his mouth. Ugh, that was so bad. Yeah. So yeah, I definitely got the secondhand embarrassment from this.
I think that's a big part of why I didn't like it as much, because that, like all of Kirk Cameron's acting like a dog felt not as funny to me. And maybe it's just because like physical comedy is harder for me to get into, but this felt more like a kid's movie to me, where it was like, he's doing a goofy thing. He's eating a couch. Ha ha ha. And I could see that being really funny and really entertaining if I was a lot younger. But watching this as an adult made me realize that, oh, this movie is definitely not for me, because I don't think his goofy antics are funny.
I think part of that for me was that I didn't find, I guess like every time he would switch into a dog, it wasn't like a new different thing he was doing, and it wasn't like changing it up from the last time he changed into a dog. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of the same joke over and over. And I also think I found it less charming because it was a 28-year-old man and not like a teenage boy. And I think, I don't know how many DCOMs don't have kids as their main stars, but right. I found that a little weird too, of like, this is a grown man starring in this DCOM, as opposed to later on when people turn into fantastical creatures and stuff. I don't want to spoil too much for Sari, but like when weird things happen to people in DCOMs in the future, it's always a teenager in high school. Right. And so I think this was a little less charming for me than Under Wraps because of that.
Yeah, he was a grown man acting like a boy. Like when he took his bubble bath, it just felt weird to me because I knew that he was an adult acting like a child because of his fail. I don't know. Yes. All that to say, same.
That's interesting too, because I didn't necessarily have that experience, but also I strongly get it. This was my big complaint watching Buffy, was always that the actor who played Xander was clearly 10 years older than the character he was playing, and it made all of his teenage boy shit like obnoxious, like just truly insufferable. Anytime he was having like what would be sort of a teenage boy moment, I couldn't feel sympathy for him, because I'm like, this is a grown ass man. Like I can't look at you and be like, oh man, this sure is some stuff, you know, teen boys go through. Like, no, you have a 401k and health insurance, sir.
Yeah, now I'm just picturing like Kirk Cameron, like, because I read a little bit of the history of this movie, which there is, again, just a little bit. And what I read was that Kirk Cameron, like, found this script, or, like, got the script from an agent or something. And he had it, like, on his desk for years trying to get this made. And
oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he eventually, like, went to Disney. I'm guessing maybe they were like, hey, we're starting to make some made-for-TV movies. And he was like, well, if I got the script for you, it's going to star me and my wife. And I'm going to be a dog.
Oh, my God.
That makes sense, because now you said 28, and I was like, he was 28 in this movie. So I was like looking at what Kirk Cameron was doing in 1998 besides You Lucky Dog. And the answer is You Lucky Dog. That's pretty much all he was doing in 1998. So cool.
Was really committed to getting his dog movie made.
It was, I mean, to be fair, like he was only a couple years away from his like Jesus movie beginnings. Like he made like the same year he made a movie called The Birth of Jesus where he plays Uncle Kirk,
and it's then direct to video
a couple years later he started doing the Left Behind movies. So yeah, this was definitely, I think, in that like in between world where like Growing Pains was done, he wasn't as famous anymore. I think I watched him in like a TV movie version, which I also thought was a DCOM, but it's apparently not, because it was before this. That was called The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes, and it was like a remake of the old Disney movie, but with Kirk Cameron playing the star. That one I saw, and I think in my brain, I thought I saw this one because I know I saw that one. And so they kind of blend together. But yeah, he was kind of looking for a new thing to do to get his star rising again.
Mm-hmm. He's like, no one else is acting like a dog, so I can really stand out.
I think I found my niche.
Maybe he would just like was known to his friends and family as like, he does a really good dog impression.
You see, he's so flexible. He can get his foot up by his ear.
I do also want to say that I loved Uncle Phil in this movie. Every time, I don't know if it was just like Uncle Phil nostalgia that was driving this, but every time he was on screen, I was happy. Probably this is Uncle Phil nostalgia. I'm not sure. Sari, how did you feel about the driver?
Oh, he was good. He like kept things real. I feel like where everyone else was pitted against Kirk Cameron and in some nefarious plot or like doubting him or something. But the driver, he was just there like... He just wanted to do a good job. He was like, I'm with this family for a while. I guess I believe you. This is weird. I'm going to take a nap. Which is a very relatable experience. If you've served like a wealthy person for your whole life and they're doing something, some antics, destroying the house, I would put in earplugs and take a nap too.
And if it meant the difference between like losing your job and not getting to live in the mansion, like, I don't care, I'll keep your secret. You can act like a dog all you want. It's cool with me.
Yeah.
Mr. Windsor was probably into some weird shit. He has tons of secrets.
This man left his entire fortune to a dog. You know.
And he had to serve the nieces and nephew, or the
yes,
he had to serve the niece and nephews too. So by comparison, this man who acts like a dog is probably fine because he just does his own thing, digs in the yard with Lucky, is instead of being really demanding about money or entitled, because they were very strange rich people. I don't know. It felt like a cartoonish version of what a rich person would be, where they've never had a job, and I don't know.
It's definitely, it was
cotton sheets were.
I use imported shampoo. Like there are a number of lines that I was like, oh, this is written by someone who also has never had money.
Yeah,
like imagining what it would be like to have money.
Marble floors and imported shampoo.
When I'm rich, I'll have it all.
And as someone who also has never had that much money, it's like, that sounds fake, but I don't know what I would write instead. Like, granite floors? That sounds a little fancier nowadays. But
now that you watch all that HGTV at the gym?
Yeah. I watch enough HGTV to know granite countertops are very in.
Before we move on. Sari, what was the snack of the episode?
Oh, I ate half a can of sour cream and onion Pringles that I just found in my cupboards. So
amazing.
Yep. Much less classic. Prepared than last time. Just whatever was around.
That feels right though.
Yeah. Like the dog, I dug around in the trash that is my cupboards and found something and ate it.
Relevant to not knowing what people with money do.
Yeah.
So this week's group discussion topic is superpowers that we wanted as kids. Matt, what were the superpowers that baby Matt wished that he could have?
I was thinking really hard about this because I always, like, people talk about, like, would you rather, like, teleport or fly or be invisible or whatever? And I think I always wanted to fly, mostly just because I also wanted to be, like, an astronaut and these kinds of things. So the idea of not having to go through astronaut school and just being able to fly up there on my own sounds great.
That's so
like,
I'm
not to sure. be an astronaut until I learned that I had to go to school a bunch.
I mean, pretty much. So, I think obviously, as far as like logical grown-up Matt goes, teleporting seems way cooler because you could just instantly be somewhere else.
Right.
And you can just vacation all the time if you wanted to. So yeah, grown-up Matt would choose teleportation, but I think kid Matt just wanted to fly.
Yeah.
Because he also liked Michael Jordan and would be really good at dunking.
I'm going to answer this question, but first, it takes me back to something that Sari said last week about, like, how one of her nightmares was, you know, people would ask, like, if there was a fire, what would you save? And now mm-hmm. we're talking about, like, if you had a superpower. And it just takes me back to, like, all of these essays that people made us write, like, as kids in school, mm-hmm. or these questions that were, like, conversational, like, not only, like, what did you want to be when you grew up, but, like, what superpower would you want? And who is deciding to ask these questions to children and why? I have no idea, but it's, like, giving me some, like, childhood trauma right now thinking about this. So.
What we really want is a 100-word essay from you, Mari.
Yes.
About
yeah.
Yeah, just written, like, in umbrella style. We need an outline.
Yes, a five-paragraph essay structure, as your fifth-grade teacher taught you. I actually have no idea when you learned to do that. I made that up. When do you learn to write an essay? I don't know. What are children?
So this is going to sound bad. I'm sure of it. But there are two things that, like, whenever I take, like, personality tests and stuff, that are always present in my personality test. And one is that I really like to know things, like, and the negative side of that is, like, you're a gossipy bitch, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah, I am, personality test. That is true. I like to know things. And the other is that I'm, like, motivated by success, aka, like, money. I just, like, want money, which is also true and relevant to this discussion. So my superpower as a kid was always invisibility, because I could listen to people's secrets and steal from banks and nobody would be able to catch me.
Whoa, you want to be a supervillain.
You were going to be a super... Yeah, these were not hero powers. These were some villain powers.
Whatever.
Or some kind of, like, vigilante hero, maybe. I don't
stealing
know.
From a bank yeah. is not a vigilante.
Yeah. I was thinking about the invisibility more of, like, you could spy on bad people.
I don't know. That's what I wanted, though, so cool.
Did anybody else want to be a villain as a child?
The thing is that I love heroes, and if you would have asked me if I wanted to be a villain, the answer would have been no. However, I wanted to know things and have money, so that was my solution.
Right. But, well, no supervillain ever thinks of themselves as a supervillain, right? So, like,
I'm the hero of my own story, damn it.
Yeah.
So I was trying to think about this, and I don't know if this is prompted by the movie, but I genuinely can't think of anything else besides I would have wanted to talk to animals as a kid. I think I spent a lot of time mostly by myself, sometimes with my brother, sometimes with friends, but a lot of time just, like, wandering around the backyard and doing whatever, making art. Or I had this little journal that I would fill out where I wrote down things about, like, the plants and the bugs and other things that were in the yard. And so I feel like probably not mind reading, and I'd probably want to have a conversation with them instead of however the powers manifested in this movie, where he could, like, get a dog impulse or read the thoughts but not talk back. I don't know.
You would like to maintain your own autonomy.
Yeah. I just want to know what the animals are thinking. But when I moved into high school, I was very into the idea of stopping time. But mostly so that I could sleep, because I had too many things. I was very, very busy all the time, and I wanted to pack more into my day. And so it'd be like, I would just wish I could stop time for 8 hours, sleep, unpause time, wake up, and then keep going, doing everything. So I just could do all the things and not worry about this boring human thing that I have to do, which is sleep.
Basically, you were Hermione Granger in high school, which tracks.
Yeah, that makes sense.
100% makes sense.
Yeah, definitely wanted a time turner, would still want a time turner. If you have one, please send it my way.
I was going to say, you were talking like that was all past tense high school, Sari, right? And yeah. I'm like, this is also a little bit of current Sari.
Still current Sari, yeah. This is true. I think now I like sleep even more than I did in high school, so I'll need to stop time for a little bit longer. But still stands, would like that power.
Well, it's great too, because if you stop time to fall asleep, then like you just sleep however much you need to sleep. Like the duration of time is whatever, because you're not going to unpause time until you wake up. Mm-hmm. So it's great. Yes, I love that. I love that for you, Sari.
Thank you.
I don't have a new answer, I guess, by virtue of going last. I, like Matt, definitely wanted to fly as a kid. And I think, like, I was thinking about this teleportation thing as you were saying it, that I have mixed feelings about it. And I think I would have had mixed feelings about it even as a kid, too, because, yes, the efficiency of being able to just get from place to place sounds really cool, but also just the experience of flying sounds really yeah. cool to me. Like, I think that's part of the appeal of this, is that I think it would just be fun to fly, like, rather than, I don't know, Mari and Sari's answers both have a strong utility to them. And certainly there is some utility to flying, but also it would be cool. I think that's a big piece of why I would want to fly, because it would be really cool to be able to fly.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever gone skydiving, Nicole?
I have not. I want to very badly, but I have not ever gone skydiving. It just that has never worked out.
I have been, and I can tell you, it's very cool. Ah! During, like, especially during the free fall thing, I was definitely doing like Superman arms a little bit. I'm just like, yeah, I am totally flying for 30 seconds and only downward.
Yes, that's the experience that I want, right? Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, I want a superpower that also seems fun in addition to being useful.
Well, this also checks out, because I was like a more nervous child. Flying does not seem fun to me. So it checks out with both of you that this is like a very cool thing that small Matt would want to fly all the way to space into the void, just going on an adventure. I'm too scared to do that. Flying sounds like falling. I don't know. Bad. All bad.
I think so many of my like childhood things or like outlooks on life involve just getting to space somehow. Because I realize, like, as we were talking about this, that like, one, maybe flying, like, I would also have to have the superpower of like lung capacity or not freezing to death in the cold of space. But I also realized that, like, I've literally told this to people before, that, like, if, you know, ghosts are real and I die and come back as a ghost, all I'm going to do is go to space. Like, because no one has ever said, like, that there are restrictions on where a ghost can float to.
Right.
So mm-hmm. I'm just going to keep floating forever uh-huh. outward.
Uh-huh.
And
just
that's
explore everything yeah. that there is to explore.
Exactly. Yeah. And so if I could fly and have the lung capacity and not freezing to death thing, I would do the exact same thing. I would just fly outward forever.
That literally sounds like hell to me.
No, I super definitely, like, I get it. And it's funny too, because you were talking about needing to know things or whatever. And when I think about, like, the thing about space that stresses me out the most is the fact that, like, we're gonna know all sorts of cool stuff long after I'm dead, and yeah. I'm really upset that I'm never gonna get to know all that stuff about space. So
that's why you gotta go haunt
big
Pluto.
Same. I'll be out there haunting space with you, Matt.
Yeah.
Haunting space.
Even teleportation kind of falls under this umbrella. Is like, you just teleport to the moon for a second and then come back before you die.
But then you don't fly to the moon, Sari.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't understand. As someone who doesn't think any of this sounds fun, I don't know what the joy is. Is the joy floating for a really long time? Is the joy
floating for a really
space?
Long time? All the cool shit you would see as you were floating? Like, there's like the journey, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I could fly super fast.
You couldn't tell anybody. You'd just be like, that's cool. That's cool. Oh, that's cool. It's like, you wouldn't be able to share or experience with anybody. It'd just be forever. At some point, it would stop being cool.
I'm okay with testing those limits.
Yeah. There's so much space, Mari.
There's
so
a lot
much
of space.
It goes on forever.
I'm with you, Mari. If I'm a ghost, I'm going to haunt Earth and overhear conversations, and it's going to be great.
I'm glad that we're like at least evenly split. So yes. No one of us feels weird.
Feels left out. Yep.
Yeah. About our desires to either haunt space or haunt humans.
Those are the two genders, haunt space or haunt
Feel free to self-identify in the comments.
We need like cooler than homework team jerseys of some sort. That's like team haunt space or team haunt earth.
All right. Well, now it's time to talk about the lessons that we learned this week on Cooler Than Homework. Matt.
I learned that you should embrace life and live every moment as if you could run out in the street and get hit by a bus. Because that's what that dog taught me in this movie.
Actually, a direct dialogue.
Yeah, that's the words he says when he's channeling through Kirk Cameron. Live like you were dying.
I didn't think about how this lesson of the episode would track with my earlier comments. And everyone's just going to leave this episode thinking I am a supervillain. However...
Amazing.
Or maybe not. This is nice. If you have a rich uncle, be nice to him, because if you're not, you'll get written out of the will. Also probably be nice to be like a nice person and all, but you know, even if it's just from the practicality standpoint of it, like why would you be mean to your rich uncle? I don't understand.
Get that money.
At least your lesson was to be nice to him and not to poison him. So
no,
on the right track.
Thanks.
My answer is going to make me sound more like a supervillain because
it is poison your uncle.
If you want to poison your rich uncle, don't do it in front of the dog because dogs are watching.
I, in spite of being the one whose job it is to ask everyone these questions, completely forgot to prepare a lesson of the episode. But I will say that my lesson, the unexpected lesson, is that it's really hard for your paws to gain traction when you run on marble. So that was a really important lesson that this movie taught me.
Listen, it's hard to walk on marble too. When I was traveling and we went to like all of these European or Mediterranean cities that had like ruins and stuff, multiple people just busted ass on like marble where it was like surrounded by, you know, dirt and you couldn't really tell where the marble still was on the floor. And we were just watching tourists tumble. Like, that's not funny. But you would just watch me just slip and fall.
Isn't down it the funny, supervillain?
What a weird evil plot. Replace all floors with marble.
Yeah.
Team and Haunt then you Earth would slip and fall. Hilarious.
So anyways, my point is that I feel that dog. I don't know that I would have put AstroTurf in the mansion, but marble is a bitch.
And now, to close out this episode, Sari, who knows nothing, is going to guess the plot of our next Disney Channel original movie, and that is going to be 1998's Brink.
So my first thought when you said Brink is that it sounds like rink, which makes me think ice skating. But I feel like that's just because it sounds like ice to me. Like the word brink sounds like the sound that ice would make. Like to the brink is an expression. So I'm going to veer away. I don't think it's ice skating. I think it's... you're making noises. No, I'm scared. Okay, so to the brink, it makes me think more... It's going to be a beach movie. And it's going to involve some scuba diving. Okay, the main character of Brink is going to be a hot lifeguard who is a little bit shallow and doesn't really know the meaning in his life. He's just a beach bum. And then he meets this girl who is a scuba diver and knows the riches of the deep ocean. Or like the slightly deeper ocean. And so he's being pushed to get deeper to the brink, to the edges of what he once was. And I don't know what else. Okay, let me think about more of the plot of the movie. We have to do antics.
I loved that, like, you arriving at this in the first place basically sounded like the script for National Treasure. Like, Break sounds like rink, sounds like ice.
Yeah, it was like old, like Adam West Batman logic.
Yeah. I have literally nothing to go off of. Yes, to be clear, the way this segment works is Nicole says a word, and then I have however much time from hearing that word to whatever my brain comes up with an idea to say something.
With you, lucky dog, you have a little bit more to go on.
Yeah,
yeah, but Brink, yeah. Brink nothing. Is truly nothing. Truly it's nothing.
Just an expression. Okay. I think there's some cliff jumping in this movie. Like maybe he pushes her a little bit more to the edge and like shows her the wild side of a beach bum. They have a falling out, of course, in the, after the second act of the movie. Maybe he returns to his old ways of beach partying and she volunteers at the local aquarium and he's not into that. I'm just describing Big Little Lies now. and the burgeoning relationship between Shailene Woodley and the aquarium boy. But yes, and then it ends with them both jumping off of a boat together into the deep ocean.
Symbolic.
Symbolic, yeah. Of yes. They trust each other.
He's no longer shallow.
He's no longer shallow. She trusts him and is willing to go on this adventure and be a little bit reckless. No more shallow scuba diving either. And they yell, to the brink! As they
jump in. Oh, man.
That's beautiful.
I love it.
I can't wait to watch this movie that you described.
Yes. Yeah. Me neither.
Let's see, how far into You Lucky Dog did you get before you went, oh, I was wrong?
Like pretty much immediately, because they have newspaper articles that say psychic dog. Things like that. Like, there's no baseball in this movie.
Well, join us next time when we watch Disney's Brink and find out how close Sari got. I will also leave you with the tagline of the movie, which is it takes a champ to stay in line. So,
oh no. You know, could apply to a lifeguard too. He's got the whistle. Stay in line, kids. This is it. This is my final pitch.
Thank you all for listening to Cooler Than Homework. If you are enjoying this podcast, please rate and review it wherever you are listening to it. We would love to hear all of your thoughts on this episode and on the classic film, You Lucky Dog. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up on snarksquad.com, or you can find us all on Twitter. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos.
You can find me at My Name is Moneyness.
And I'm at C.E. Riley.
Thank you to Stefan Chan for the theme music that is playing us out right now. And we will see you next time.